Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Where would American cinema be without Robert Duvall? Think of the classics he's made: To Kill a Mockingbird, MASH, the Godfather movies, Network, Apocalypse Now, and The Great Santini. And all those were before he earned an Academy Award for playing the struggling country singer Max Sledge in 1983's Tender Mercies. He dates his favorite role of all time to 1989, when he played Gus McCrae in the iconic miniseries Lonesome Dove. He has directed four films, including The Apostle, which fellow Academy Award winner Matt Damon has said should be required viewing for anyone who wants to be an actor. And having just celebrated his 79th birthday, he is working today as hard as ever with three movies released last year, including the critically acclaimed Crazy Heart and The Road. Up next, he will play Don Quixote in Terry Gilliam's The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. Robert Duvall is in town to speak tonight at a sold-out event of the Nasher Salon Series. Robert, I'm so glad to have you. Welcome to Think.
Thank you, good. Nice to be here.
You've described yourself as a sort of late bloomer in terms of your career.
Well, you know, I started when I was 20 in school. I mean, I started working fairly early, but I always felt that after The Godfather 1, that was kind of a catalyst for a lot of us to go on to better and higher things. And I always knew that mine would come maybe 10 years after the other guys, although I did work in that interim time. But I always felt that I did better. Because, you know, not that I had a sheltered life, but a military family, we moved around, and, you know, I wasn't exposed to a lot of things. So I think that I, compared to the youth of today, they know so many things at a young age. I think that I was a late bloomer in that, you know, I learned about life and getting out into life a bit later than others.
I wonder if that was good in a way for your acting, in that you sort of allowed a lot of things to develop slowly.
Yeah, and and certain things I did way back, mm-hmm. I don't even watch. Well, you know, I tend to think in the last 20 years, that's a long time, but in the last 20 years, some of the better work I've done has been during that time. From a little bit before that maybe, but through, you know, Lonesome Dove on down to now.
Unusually for a man of your generation, your parents were delighted with your choice to become an actor.
They kind of nudged me into it because mm-hmm. I wasn't doing too well. But I went to a small school that had a wonderful drama department. So they suggested for expedient reasons that I change my major to drama, you know, and I did. They had a wonderful man there, Frank Parker, at Principia College. And my first play that I did was a full-length mime play where I played a Harlequin clown.
Wow.
Called The Story of Two Pierrots. And I remember that my Harlequin character had his own company, mime company, and they did a play within a play of Gone with the Wind, a mime version of Gone with the Wind.
It's hard to imagine that.
Yeah, it was really nice. And it was put to Ravel and Stravinsky music, and Bill Snyder, who wrote it, was a very talented guy who kind of disappeared from New York and went somewhere. He wrote a wonderful play called The Days and Nights of B.B. Fenstermaker that we did off-Broadway at one time. So, you know, that my parents, you know, for expedient reasons, kind of pushed me into it, although I came from a military family.
So they were not artistic at all?
Yeah, well, my two brothers were singers. My younger brother was the leading tenor for the Gridiron Press for the president every year. My older brother was retired, but he was an opera, a very good, beautiful baritone. He was a Fulbright scholar for 2 years in Italy. So we did have artistic tendencies in the family, yeah.
A lot of people know that you did your own singing in Tender Mercies,
yeah.
But do you think of yourself as a musician aside from that?
No, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. I like to do my own things, my own horsemanship, my own singing. If I have to dance or something, I want to do everything myself. Unless it's dangerous, then you have a double.
Your wife is Argentinian, but you
yes.
actually introduced her to tango.
Yes, I did.
Do you remember the first time you danced together?
Yeah, she got all over me. We were trying to keep our courtship a bit secret, but people could see through that quickly. But, yeah, I took her, when I first met her, I took her to a milonga, where they dance tango, the waltz, and the milonga, which is a dance, but they call the club a milonga, where the street dancers go. And I took her to one when we first met, and she had never been to that in her own culture. She was from northern Argentina, although she was living in Buenos Aires at the time. And she took to dancing well. I mean, that especially the tango, even though she, not that you have to be Argentine, but you know, the first time she did it, the guy stepped back and said, well, do you ride horses? You know, because she grew up riding horses. He could tell that. But she took to it well, and I put her in a movie, Assassination Tango. Yeah. She stole the show, and she was terrific. And she, well, I wanted to, she may want to do a little bit more, you know, and she's done a couple of documentaries on her own. Mm-hmm. She did a wonderful documentary on Billy Joe Shaver, the country singer from...
From Texas.
Yeah, from Texas. And then one on Horton Foot, perhaps now our greatest current writer, Horton Foote, who died 6 months ago. He has plays now in New York that, and one on Broadway last year that I think will elevate him above Tennessee Williams or Arthur Miller or any of them. He really came into his own the last 5 or 6 years. I think he's our premier playwright.
Do you think Americans have lost that connection to the people who write the plays and the movies that they're really interested in? There's so much celebrity culture.
Well, yeah, there's a celebrity culture, but and I want to give some people disagree with me, and I think they're wrong. The young actors are as good or better than ever. They're very good young actors now because they seem to grasp a knowledge of things at a young age. And plus, I think instead of going into the 21st century of being a writer or a novelist, which there are plenty, many young people want to be film directors, actors. It's kind of an in medium now. And a lot of very talented people are drawn to the, at least motion picture acting. I don't know, theater too, I suppose. I started out in the theater. I don't do theater acting now much. I did quite a bit of it a few years back. But I think that, that there is a connection, but I think it's a strange culture, you know, the stardom and this and that and this and that, you know. But I think that the young people are pretty hip.
You've been nominated 6 times for Academy Awards. Of course, you won for Tender Mercies. If you had to choose yourself which role to award that statue to, would that have been the one?
Maybe, yeah. I almost won one for Apocalypse Now, supporting. I won the British Academy Award for Apocalypse Now. Yeah. The year that I was up in, it was very close, when I was up for the Great Santini. But De Niro won it for The Raging Bull. I didn't mind because he was wonderful. When I was up for the Academy Award for The Apostle and didn't win, I thought that there's something off there.
That was a disappointment.
I won't go any further.
Yeah, well, that was a disappointment to you. I know. You put your heart, your soul, your personal money into that movie.
Yeah, but also awards. It's a strange thing because we didn't reap any awards other than makeup. I think for Lonesome Dove. We didn't win any Emmys, which was amazing. And when we walked out, Angelica Houston said, well, no more TV for me. You know, it's like strange. It could be very political. You know, the picking of, I suppose artistic endeavors shouldn't necessarily be, you know, competitive, but they are. When you have Oscars or Emmys, it's extremely political and extremely competitive.
I was interested to read that McMurtry developed Lonesome Dove first as a screenplay before he made it into a novel.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Had you read
the novel was great.
Yeah. Had you read the novel before you ever were attached to the TV
project? My ex-wife, God bless her, says, they're going to try to tell you to play this one part, but you have to play Augustus McRae. I would not have gone after it. She hadn't have said this. She said, I have read a novel, she said, who to me may be better than Dostoevsky.
Wow.
She flipped over the novel. So they did offer me the other part, and I said to my agent, if you can get James Garner, who was supposed to play my part, to switch, then I'll do it. He called back 4 hours later. He said, James Garner can't be on a horse for 16 weeks. He can't play the part. I said, so go after that part now. And I've only seen my ex-wife once, and I didn't get a chance to really thank her for that. And then I read the novel in 10 days. It was a magnificent book. I've since tried to read a book for 900 pages. It took me a month. Don Quixote.
That's right. That's the next one, right? With Terry Gilliam.
I hope so. Mm-hmm. You know, they're trying to get it all together.
It's got to be frustrating when you're waiting on a project that you're really excited about.
Yes. Yeah, it's tough. You know, it's all about raising the funds and putting the proper components in place, you know. And, you know, he came to my farm in Virginia, and I'm very excited about that. He had seen me play. This would have never happened had he not seen me do a part. I did a movie with Richard Harris where I played a part of a Cuban barber.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw it or not.
No.
I played this, and I really, really, really worked hard on it. Three different acts. I listened to accents and only eat Cuban food, only go to Cuban restaurants. And I think it came off well, and he never forgot it. And then he approached me in Toronto recently when I have a film. We had a film showing up there, and wanted me approached me about doing Don Quixote, not per se like the novel, but a guy from a small village who's a shoemaker, who they take to put in a commercial to play Don Quixote. And when it's over and it all falls apart, he goes back to being a shoemaker. So if he had not seen me play that Cuban barber, he would have not offered me that part, you know, with an accent and everything, you know. So it could be very exciting.
Robert Duvall is my guest. He's in town to appear tonight at a sold-out event of the Nasher Salon Series. We'll resume our conversation in just a moment, and you can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. Right now, we need to take a very quick break to ask for your support of KERA. We are in our winter membership campaign. We exist on the air because of the generosity of people who listen and who value the service. Our number is 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington joins us now. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. What a fantastic conversation, and I think that I know we've strayed into the realm of, gosh, this guest is just too interesting for a membership campaign, but that's why we have these short little breaks, very short little breaks, to urge you to call 1-888-694-6931, to go online to kera.org, make a safe and secure e-pledge there. Do it because you don't hear these kinds of conversations anywhere else but on public radio, and in North Texas, you don't hear it anywhere but KERA.
It is nice to have the whole hour, and that's something that we know that you value as listeners. It's nice to be able to sit down with truly a legend like Robert Duvall and speak to him for an hour and not have to, as I did in my former career in commercial news, I'd have to get this done in a minute and a half, which is impossible and certainly not worth his time and not worth your time. To listen to someone like this, you really want to sort of plumb the depths of things. We're very honored to be able to bring you this service. And we exist because you value it enough to send a few dollars our way. You know, for you, it may be $5 a month. It may be $50 or $500 a month. You know what you can afford. But we would ask that you call us now, 1-888-694-6931, and make a contribution.
Yeah, please consider what you get out of KERA, what you've heard on the station, maybe even some of the authors or thinkers that you've been exposed to on this very show. And then, you know, dig deep. Pick up the phone, call 1-888-694-6931. Make that contribution because this is a service that you rely on and you would miss it if it was gone. I mean, certainly. And, you know, to be completely honest, KERA is not going anywhere. There are close to 30,000 people or so who support the station every year. But the fact of the matter is 400,000 plus people listen to the station every week. And if you're one of those people who listens for hours a day and you have not contributed to the station, this is your opportunity. We're asking you to please take responsibility for the fact that you use the service. And, you know, it costs a lot of money to bring you public radio in North Texas. So help defray some of that cost right now at 1-888-694-6931.
One of the reasons that we're able to be with you for an hour at a time is that we don't have to have commercials like a lot of other stations, and so we're able to devote a lot more time to content. The reason we don't have commercials is because we come directly to you for funding. If you think about what your personal time is worth, if it's worth $10 a month to you to not have to listen to commercial after commercial after commercial on your valuable time, we would ask that you donate that to KERA now. You can make the contribution online at kera.org, or you can call us at 1-888-694-6931. In just a couple of minutes, we will resume our conversation with actor Robert Duvall.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is actor, writer, and director Robert Duvall. He is in town for a sold-out event tonight for the Nasher Salon Series in Dallas. You can join the conversation by sending email to think@kera.org or by calling 1-800-933-5372. Robert, when you were shooting that scene that everybody remembers from Apocalypse Now, do you have any idea that you would hear that line from other people every day of your life for the rest of your life?
Yeah, I do. Well, you knew. I didn't realize it, but I do hear it. And a lot of times when people come up and say it, they reckon that they're the only person that knows that line, and I'm the only person. It's like a thing between us.
Yeah.
So I do. And when I did the Apostle way back, I did a lot of research all over the country, I mean, for years. And I met one preacher down in Georgia. And, of course, they all say they don't see movies, but I think they do. And he said, well, I heard that Robert Duvall had a famous line. It went something like, I love the smell of gasoline in the morning. Got it a little bit wrong. Yeah.
Do you like the research process?
Oh, yeah, I do, yeah, if it's called for. You know, I mean, if I do this Don Quixote, I'll probably do research through different countries, you know, perspective of the guy, you know, all the Latin countries and so forth. And then I have to start riding a horse again to ride well, to look like you ride bad, you know. So, yeah, you know, when I did Lonesome Dove, I did some research, but I'd gone to my uncle's ranch when I was a kid up in northern Montana, and I got a kind of my impersonal, you know, my informal indoctrination into Western lore. But the script was so good, it just kind of led me along. So I didn't have to do a lot of research, but I did right before I started. We took a drive, Larry Elkins, and it was, I forget who else, my assistant. We drove out towards San Saba, Texas, Rotan, and met up old Sammy Ball, the old quarterback for the Washington Redskins. Mm-hmm. And I sat there he didn't know who I was. We sat for 2 hours and talked, because the guy we were with had played with him at the Houston Oilers when he was coach. And I noticed his gestures, and I took those gestures and put them in to my character as Augustus McRae. It was kind of like the last icing on the cake before we started shooting. And about 8 years later, somebody told him what had happened, and because he didn't know who I was,
huh.
And Sammy Ball. It was great meeting him to get just that. By chance, I happened to go out there and meet him, because as a kid, I'd seen him play and always admired him.
It was really fun to see Crazy Heart recently, and you know, right. So many people have drawn parallels to Tender Mercies, and of course, you were in both films in very different roles.
Yeah.
Were you drawn to the parallel as well?
It's somewhat similar. Obviously, when Scott Cooper made the adaptation from the book, you know, and my company helped produce it. We helped produce it. Yeah, there's a certain, it's different, but there's certain similarities. More country rock, like Christofferson and those guys sing, and what we did in Tender Mercies was more straight country music. But there's a certain. I always said in my character, I had a support system. A wife, a new wife, a son, a baptism. Jeff, who played the part so beautifully, he didn't have a support system. He just was left on his own. So my character as a friend was his only one. And the woman that cut him off, because I admire the woman for doing that, because most women would stay with a guy like that.
Yeah.
But once he jeopardized the safety of her son, that was it, no more. And a lot of women aren't that strong. So there were certain similarities, but it's doing very well, Crazy Heart. People really are responding to it.
Can you always tell when you read? Because you take big parts and you take small parts, whatever you think is going to work.
I took that part to help the production.
Mm-hmm.
They say you have to be in it. I said, I don't quite buy that, but I'll be in it if it helps the production.
Well, I didn't know you were in it, and then it was this amazing surprise to sort of see it. And it's a small but really pivotal role.
Yeah, it was a nice part, yeah. Mm-hmm. But what I did was help cast. I really was hands-on about casting the smaller parts, all those parts I thought out. You know, like I figured, why not put a Latin doctor in to play the part of the doctor? And we went down, we had our insurance examinations in Santa Fe. The guy that came in to to examine us was a Latin. So I was right, you know, that part of the countries, you know, to try to honor the certain ethnic people, you know.
How does it work for you when you're cast with another actor that you didn't choose, that you don't feel the chemistry is right? You have to make it work anyway.
You just do it. The beginning, like the beginning and the end of the tango is the walk. The beginning and the end of acting is just talking and listening in a very simple way, like we're doing now. To me, that's it. I mean, you can do a lot of research on the part. You can think about it, concoct it in your imagination. But when they say action, between action and cut, it's a basic, simple process of talking and listening. I talk, you listen. You talk, I listen. So that's what it boils down to, really.
Is that more valuable than rehearsal?
Well, you know, it depends. Rehearsal could be okay sometimes, but sometimes you rehearse on film, because then if it's not good, you take two, take three, take four. So some people like to rehearse, some don't. I think Jeff and Maggie, and the director, they did rehearse. And in some projects with a director, you trust him maybe to do a little rehearsal. Others you don't want to rehearse with, you know.
You want to get right
sometimes
in there and
do
it.
Sometimes you just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Ken in Plano. Hello, Ken. Hi, Ken. Hi, go right ahead. Oh, we lost Ken. Okay, we will move on and go to Susie in Plano. Hi, Susie.
Hi. First of all, I want to say it is such an honor and a privilege to speak with you and obviously with Robert Duvall. Mr. Duvall, you are memorable for so many lines, but I have to tell you, as I'm sitting here sipping on a glass of wine, that I don't know if you remember your one of the lines you had with Gina Rowlands, I believe, when she wouldn't let you in the house. And
Right. Yeah.
Something to talk about, and you said, "Have you been into the apple wine?"
Right.
That line is whenever, I mean, there's so many lines and so many wonderful moments in acting that you have given all of us, but that is the line that I think about when I think about Robert Duvall, and it's the line I use all the time.
Did I say apple wine or apple jack?
I think you said wine. That's
could
why
be.
I remember
it could
so
be.
Well.
It could have been a written line or improvised. I can't remember. I might have made it up at the moment, or maybe it was scripted. I can't remember. But I remember when we did that scene, that the director, he kind of set it up and liked it a lot, the kind of a comedic overtone to the whole scene, as I remember.
Have you ever turned on the TV late at night and found yourself in something that you almost had forgotten shooting?
Yeah, there's been a few pictures I've done I haven't seen.
Huh.
But, yeah, that happens, but not often. But what's happened a couple of times, I've turned on the TV twice, I remember, during maybe when after Godfather 2 began, I said, let me watch 5 minutes. I watched the whole thing. It's wonderful filmmaking. Godfather 1 and 2 by Coppola, that was just magnificent filmmaking, it, the height of filmmaking.
And you didn't do the third?
No. No, I didn't.
And you've never missed it?
No, I didn't miss it. You know, it was a matter of whatever, business, so forth. He came to my house in Virginia. And he parked his car, and he came in, and he always wanted my mother's crab cake recipe. So I wrote it down for him, and we talked about the movie. And when he left, he forgot the recipe, and he kept calling. He was more concerned that he'd forgotten the recipe than would I do Godfather 3. It was funny.
It's a sign it's time to do something else.
Yeah.
Are you always able to look at a script and know this is the part for you, or is that a skill that took some cultivating?
Well, you go with a hunch. I mean, it's still how you react to the part. And if you really like it, that's really good, I think. But then you say, who's directing? What are they going to pay me? Who's in it with me? You know. But I think the initial thing with the part is how you really react to it at the moment emotionally.
How did things change for you when you were in a position to only do things that you really cared about? I would imagine early on in the early 60s, you had to take work because you had to put food on the table.
Yeah, a lot of TV.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of, you know, it's a lot of actors will not do TV.
Well, some of the
TV
is great,
and I got away
though.
From it to do features.
Yeah.
I put it on, that's it. But yet, you know, I don't mind doing TV. I did recently, we did Broken Trail, the Western in Canada with the five Chinese girls.
That was the Thomas Hayden Church.
Yes.
Yeah.
If it had been done as a feature film, maybe six people would have seen it. They projected 10 million people would see it. Over 30 million people saw that. And, you know, so I don't mind doing television. When I did Stalin, that was television, you know. It's all action and cut. It's acting. It's believing in the situation. You know, you put yourself in an imaginary set of circumstances. So why not do television? Some actors will never do television.
You've played so many iconic figures in history. I saw you in a very sort of small Disney film where you played Joseph Pulitzer.
Which one?
Was it Newsies? Is that the one?
Newsies, yeah.
Would you study the people that you were covering, or that you were playing, or did you always want that to be your from the heart interpretation of people?
No, I just who was the Secretary of State to Nixon? What was his name? Kissinger,
Henry Kissinger.
I tried to play Henry Kissinger in that, just to get his voice. And when I did,
so you were Henry Kissinger in the role of
yeah,
Joseph
kind of
Pulitzer.
Yeah, and. And then when I did, I did a Way Out kind of film that I kind of liked, but not many people saw, called The Lightship. And I did kind of like William Buckley kind of a guy. William Buckley, kind of a camp version of that. So, you know, but you try to do something that doesn't violate you as a person doing it, because underneath it's you doing it, turned in a certain way. You can't become somebody else. Literally. So it has to be you, one set of emotion, one psyche, one whatever. It's you doing it, turned.
Does it ever amaze you that one person is able to find all those different sides of himself or herself, whoever's acting?
How do you mean, like?
Well, it's pretty, it does all come from within the same person, and most of us can't.
Yes.
Everybody thinks they can act, but most of us can't.
Well, yeah. But, you know, I've directed three or four things, and I like to put non-actors or first-time actors in parts, because if they step across that line and want to act, then they don't have any bad habits, and sometimes they can put the professional actor on notice, and they can be very pure. And just when I did The Apostle, I had to people it with real people from that Pentecostal community. So especially if I said, somebody give me an amen, and I want to buy a little time, and they would come back with what they grew up with, which was from their heritage, so to speak.
So it felt really natural.
Yeah. So sometimes when you use real people, it you can inundate it with a certain kind of reality you can't get. For instance, when I did my the movie in Argentina, the Tango Assassination Tango, I hired the real tango people to play the parts, because I don't know if an actor would know how to sit with a cigarette in a tango parlor. But if you get the real thing and they want to act, and you know, and you get them to be relaxed so that they're not acting, then you got a great gift from a non-actor.
Academy Award winner Robert Duvall is my guest. He's in town for a Nasher Salon Series event tonight that is unfortunately already sold out. We'll resume our conversation with Robert in just a couple of minutes. Right now, we want to ask you to pause from listening. We will just very briefly pause the fascinating conversation with Robert Duvall. You can just listen to me for a moment. And so you won't miss anything if you make your call now to 1-888-694-6931. You can also make a contribution to KERA by going online to KERA.org. There are several different ways that you can set up your support to the station. A lot of people like to do what we call a sustaining membership, which is where instead of saying, okay, I'll give, $180 this year, you set it up so $15 a month comes out of your checking account and straight into our account. You sort of stay a member permanently until you make a change, and it means that you don't have to think about it again, which is very convenient. We've all got so many things to do these days. Jeff Whittington is back with us now. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. What a fantastic chat and a captivating show. And I just want to initially remind you of the phone number, those of you listening, 888-694-6931. Or, of course, you can contribute online at kera.org. I also want to thank some folks who have called or contributed online. Ella Malone in Fort Worth, thank you very much. Also to Sheila Madigan in Dallas, Melissa Wright in Plano. Levis Perry in Dallas, Mr. and Mrs. Jerry Smiley, who called or joined online from Arlington. Also, Rodney Pirtle in Dallas and Rosalba Dean, who called or joined online from Grapevine. Thank you so much to each of you. We'd love to see your name. We'd love to read your name. We'd love to hear that phone ring down the hall and know that you have done your part.
Thanks to Mateen Patel in Irving, Cheryl Anderson in Richardson, and Karen Elenich in Dallas, all calling, I'm guessing, because you love the show, but also because we have Robert Duvall here in studio. He's very patiently sitting here
yes.
with us in the studio. It's always difficult when we have to sort of put someone on hold. We only do this fundraising a couple times a year and are very pleased that he's been so gracious about this. But we would ask that you give us a call now. Let us get right back to our conversation. The telephone number is 1-888-694-6931. You can also go online to kera.org.
And, of course, the same deal stands. Of course, when you call or join online, the membership campaign ends immediately for you because you'll know that you've done your part and you'll know that we're not talking to you anymore. You'll know that we are talking to someone else, your neighbor, your friend, maybe even someone you could influence to make a contribution as well. And, of course, the same deal stands as in all of our membership campaigns. Once we reach our overall goal, the drive ends at that moment. So we are working our way to finishing this membership campaign, getting right back to the regular schedule, but we got to get your participation to do it. The number to call is 1-888-694-6931. You can also join online at kera.org, and when you go to kera.org, you can see all the different thank you gifts, including Come Back America, David M. Walker's book, who we interviewed in the last hour, who Chris had as her guest, and all the books that we've had from authors earlier in the week. Matt Miller springs to mind, and there are all kinds of great ways that we can thank you, but you have to get involved. You have to make that next step by calling 1-888-694-6931.
Okay, I hear the music starting. That means that we will resume our conversation in just a couple of minutes with Academy Award winner Robert Duvall. Now is your time, though, to get on the phone, complete your membership conversation before the conversation starts again. It's perfect. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. We have plenty of folks standing by, so you don't have to worry about being on hold there. You can also go online to kera.org.
Please do your part and do it right now, because it only takes a couple of minutes, and you get a whole year of programming from KERA. Programming, news and information, and entertainment that you can count on. It's up to you. It's your responsibility. Please call 888-694-6931 or contribute online at kera.org. And thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Academy Award winner Robert Duvall, in town tonight for a sold-out event of the Nasher Salon Series. We'll go back to the phones now, and this time speak with Aaron in Mansfield. Hi, Aaron.
Hey. First, a great honor to talk to you, Mr. Duvall. You're amazing.
Thank you.
A horseman. I'm a gymnastics coach and a swim coach. But you are a chameleon. I'm very honored to speak to you.
The question
I have is, from 1960 to 1972, you went from Outer Limits to True Grit to The Godfather. What an amazing time and an adventure for you.
Yes,
and,
sir.
I just want you to elaborate on that and just want to appreciate you as a fan.
Thank you. He sounds like a Texas Ranger I know.
Is that right?
Very much so, sir.
Yeah. He has the accent, yeah. So,
your early career, talk about... Maybe it was more exciting. Maybe it's more exciting now when you would be cast in something that you were excited about.
Well, it all has its emphasis of excitement. You know, I like it now in the last 20 years a lot. And back then it was nice because, the guys I came up with, Dustin Hoffman and Gene Hackman, who I don't see much. It's a very strange business. We all lived out our daydreams, and we dreamed about this and that. And, you know, and our dreams more or less became fulfilled, you know, but there's always like I always think of myself until I end the whole thing, that till they wipe the drool, so to speak. I try to think of myself in the potential, that always growing a little bit and finding new things, you know. Actually, you mentioned True Grit. They're going to do I don't know, but maybe it'll be okay. They're going to do a remake of True Grit.
seems like one of those films that nobody should touch.
I know, in a way, but the Coen brothers might bring a new slant to it, and Jeff Bridges will be very good, I think, in John Wayne's part, you know. And what's his name is going to play my part. What's his name? He might be better than I was. Because back in those days, it was difficult working with some of those old-time directors. The new director, Josh Brolin, is going to play my part. Wonderful actor. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, there's enough new things, I think. Why do they have to do remakes? We have a film opening the Sundance Festival coming up tomorrow night that Crazy Heart was going to open the festival, but then they had a commercial opening. So now a film we did this last spring, which is my company and Dean Zanuck, which is totally different. It's a wonderful little film that we're going to open. And, you know, it's under $10 million. We're trying to do more and more films in that under $10 million range, which is difficult. You know, you have to have a certain talent to produce a film like that.
What's different when it's made on a lower budget? Is it just more intimate?
No, it's just you have more control, and sometimes the story warrants, you know, a lower budget, you know, and sometimes, sometimes when they make a large budget film, a $100 million movie, they know it's going to fail anyway in the back of their minds.
They just instead send it overseas.
Instead of making $10 million movies, they make these big movies that, you know, and the smaller movies now are the ones that used to be within the establishment in the 70s, the great era of filmmaking with Coppola, you know, and Scorsese and those guys, But now it's like they're outside the system, but they're still being made because now they make the great big movies, you know.
Is there anything that you would take off your resume and if you had it all to do over again, just not do?
To take something off my resume?
Yeah. Is there anything that you regret having done?
I'm sure there are a few. I've turned down a couple of films. Uh-huh. I turned down the lead in Jaws. They offered me the part in Seven, and they offered me the part in Shawshank Redemption. I didn't take him. Morgan Freeman did a wonderful job in both of them. He's a wonderful actor, but a few things I've turned down I shouldn't have. In Jaws, I wanted to play the Portuguese fisherman that Robert Shaw played, but I was too young. But there are certain things I have done that, you know, certain things that, you know, they're not quite up to snuff at all.
It must be interesting to have gone from playing the sort of the young guy, the kid, and now you're playing, you know, in these roles as you approach your 80s. It's a totally different set of parts.
Absolutely, because when I was younger, I always wanted to play older parts, putting on makeup, and I always could do that to a certain extent. And now, as I get older, I don't have to just show up. Show up, yeah. Well, this film we did that's going to open the festival in Sundance, Get Low. It's a wonderful little film by a Southern writer about a man who sets up and goes to his own funeral. He's living in the woods with a lot of guilt for something he's done. And that was pretty interesting. I needed a beard, and so I don't know if we're going to ever do the Hatfields and the McCoys, but I got a wonderful guy in Hollywood to make me a beard from the picture of the guy from the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Wow.
What a great beard he put on me, Kenny. What a great beard. So that worked out nicely. But as far as the regular makeup, I didn't have to. I guess if I do Don Quixote, I have to lose some weight. I've been eating too much of this Texas meat here, so I have to be careful.
Do you keep a beard on throughout filming, or does it come on and off
every
day?
There's a scene where it's cut off, where I get it cut off in a barber shop, you know. But sometimes you film out of context, so certain days you put it on, some days you don't.
Does the costume make a big difference for you when you step onto the set and you feel like you look like your character?
Yeah, sometimes I know some actors that, Wilford Brimley, he wants to wear his own clothes. Sometimes if you wear your own pair of shoes, you feel more centered as yourself than if you put on and sometimes when you put on the wrong shirt or the wrong hat, the hat, especially in Westerns, the hat is so important. The hat is as important as the horse you pick.
To the character.
Yeah, and if it's not the right hat, you just don't feel right. So the costume is important, and once you personalize it, make it part of you, then you forget about it.
You ever take things home, costume pieces? And
I couldn't get the hat for Lonesome Dove. Somebody else got it. I don't know where it is.
It's probably
museum.
On eBay now.
Yeah, I'd like to have it, but they made a lot of reproductions of it. The Gus McRae hats are very popular now. Sometimes I do. When I played, View from the Bridge off Broadway, Dustin Hoffman's assistant stage manager, And we had a terrific production at Lulu Grossbar, directed it. I bought a vest off a guy on 42nd Street, and I kept that vest. They designed a whole look for me for the character. They had an artistic director for the, you know, costume designer. I said, no. I'm going to wear this vest, and I kept that vest for many years.
Do you have any mementos? Do you like to hang on to little things from every film, or is it just pretty rare that you want
something? Not
so much.
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Not so much. Sometimes the script. I have two versions of the script of the original script of Lonesome Dove. I gave one away as a present, and they're like, wow. But I kept one, like the original script that, you know, and my wife has mounted them and everything, so it's really nice. So some of the scripts you keep, the original scripts, like of The Godfather and one of Apocalypse, whatever.
I read someplace that you've got, wherever you keep your Academy Award, close to that you have a letter that Marlon Brando wrote.
Yes. Oh, you heard about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they kind of face each other. I like that as much as anything. You know, when Dustin Hoffman and Gene Hackman, we used to meet at Cromwell's drugstore. I think it's like 58th and 6th. It's right at Rockefeller Plaza there, the drugstore. We used to meet like almost every day. And if we mentioned Brando's name once, we mentioned it 25 or 30 times.
He was a hero.
He was like the hero. When we met to do The Godfather, we all sat around the table like a family, and he was like The Godfather. So you know, it meant a lot, you know, because he was pretty unique talent, really a great actor who sometimes didn't live up to his potential because it came easy to him, and he didn't really like acting that much. But he wrote me a letter after I sent him a copy of The Apostle, and it was a wonderful letter, and I mounted it. I like it almost as much as my Oscar or more, you know, because it was a very complimentary letter.
And do you write to people, or do you contact young actors that you see? You
sometimes
you like
I will. This email, I don't even know how to work these things. But I send it through my office, you know, like I met this guy, Josh Brolin. I like his work a lot. Or I sent congratulatory comments to Jeff Bridges that he's done so wonderful in the movie. Or, you know, and Terry Gilliam, I send him back and forth, you know. So you do sometimes do that.
Is there any role out there that has not yet been proposed for you that you think you were born to play?
Well, I don't know. Sometimes you plan something. We have a border movie I'm dying to do, but it's hard to find financing. Mm-hmm. A two-part miniseries about the border and about these tick riders that ride to keep cattle coming over from ticks from Mexico. But I don't know if I'll ever get to do it. And sometimes the things you plan, something will come around a corner that's better than what you plan. And that's what this, out of nowhere, this Don Quixote project came from Terry Gilliam. So that's, wow, when we finally get to do it. I think he's looking at Casey Affleck to play the sidekick.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have any money, but I sure hope it gets made.
Yeah, well, I hope. I think it will, you know. And there are other things, too. Always looking to do something, you know, something.
Robert, it has been just a supreme pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for making the time.
Well, thank you, Chris. I really enjoyed it.
My name is Chris Boyd. Robert Duvall is in town to speak tonight at a sold-out event of the Nasher Salon Series. I want to thank, of course, Robert Duvall for being with us for the entire hour. It was really wonderful. Yeah. I want to thank all of you who have joined us as members this last hour, supporters of the station. The telephone number to do that is 1-888-694-6931.
Yes, and please do call 888-694-6931 or join online at kera.org. After all, it is your public radio station. It is your responsibility, in a sense. This is a member-funded, listener-funded public broadcasting organization. And, you know, 57 cents of every dollar that gets spent to run this station comes directly from contributions of listeners. You're a listener, so why not make that call? 1-888-694-6931 or contribute online at KERA.org.
That was so much fun for me, and I hope that it was as much fun for you listening. Robert Duvall is headed now over to Booker T. Washington High School to speak to the students there, which is amazing. I can't imagine what that experience would be like for these young actors in training to be able to meet him. It's really our pleasure to be able to bring you guests like this, and it's only possible because of your support. I say that with all sincerity. Without the funding from people who listen to the station and value having an hour, having not a a minute of sound bites, but having an hour with one of the towering figures in American cinema is possible because of listener support. Our telephone number is 1-888-694-6931. You can also make a contribution at kera.org.
888-694-6931 is the phone number. Online at kera.org. Check out the thank you gifts. If a thank you gift is important to you, you can see the Think Mug, for instance, at the $60 membership level when you go online at kera.org. Or, you know, you can choose to put all of your contribution toward programming, which is what the majority of contributors do who call or join online. And, you know, if you choose to not peruse the thank you gifts, filling out that membership form online just takes about 90 seconds. I know because I timed it myself, and it doesn't take very long, and it can be as affordable as you want it to be. So just pick a number, pick a dollar amount that's right for you, and make the call, 1-888-694-6931.
It's not a complicated thing, and maybe you've just never joined your public radio station before or any public broadcasting station, and so you think to yourself, join? What am I getting if I join? Well, the truth is you've been getting it all along. You know, it's not a matter of, you know, we make you wait and then we open the content to you. We put it out there and then leave it up to you to value the service, to recognize its importance. I mean, I would argue that if you're listening for, you know, hours every week, you are already a de facto member of the station. It's just time for you to make your contribution.
Yeah, you've already used the product. You know, we're in the unique position of selling something, and we're not really selling it, but in a sense, we're selling something that you've already purchased, but you just haven't paid for it. You've already you already know what the product is. You already use the product. You already like the product, hopefully, and otherwise, you know, I don't know why you'd be listening. And it's there for you all the time, 24 hours a day. KERA is on the air for you to utilize, to be entertained by, to get information from. And all we're doing is asking you now to pay for it a little bit. The number to call to do that, to make a contribution, is 1-888-694-6931. You can join online, as we've said every time. We've said the phone number. You can make an e-gift online at kera.org. It is a service that you use already. And, you know, 57% of the budget for this station comes directly from contributions of listeners. It's listener-supported public radio. You're a listener. So the end of that circle is that you support the station. Take that next step. Be the next one to call, 888-694-6931.
It's interesting if you've experienced this as a member of the station. We really think of you as team members. When you become a member of the station, your support makes it possible for us to do our jobs and for the station to run. And, we've said it before, we would love to be able to do this work and have it completely available for free and not ask for money, but it's just not possible because the world doesn't run that way. We have, even aside from salaries and things like that, we have programming costs from the national services. We have just expenditures in terms of keeping the tower operating and making sure that the signal is clear and strong where you live. We have all the repeaters that exist in places like Tyler and Wichita Falls and Sherman. These things come with costs attached. We would just ask that you help defray the cost. Also be aware that any national programming that you listen to, KERA pays for our portion of that based on how many listeners we have. And this is a big market. And so the truth is, it is costing us something to have you listening. Now, we don't want you to stop. We're delighted to have you. But just keep that in mind and consider making even a small gift of support or perhaps a large gift of support if you're in the position. The number is 1-888-694-6931.
Yeah, this is the fifth market for radio in the country. And the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex has millions of residents and hundreds of thousands of you, and you're one of those folks, listens to this station every week. It does actually, as Chris said, cost money based on how many people listen. You know, NPR takes our ratings, our market size, and there's a, you know, sort of a rubric that comes up with what our portion of the, you know, what our cost is to run NPR programming every year. And it's $1 million plus, you know, plus, I think it's $1 million plus now.
They call them dues.
Yeah, it's been $1 million, slightly less than $1 million in the past. And it's $1 million now to NPR to run the Diane Rehm Show, Fresh Air, All Things Considered, Morning Edition, and the weekend programs that you listen to. And we're thrilled to be able to bring you Think here locally. And, of course, you know, just to be able to have the lights on in here costs extra and above that $1 million. So we're asking you to make your $35 or your $350 or your $3,000 contribution today to help pay for this stuff, these real, tangible costs that come with bringing you the programming.
And I, by the way, will personally guarantee that we are a building full of people who, when not necessary, turn off the lights. We try to use your money very carefully. You are supporting your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, and online at kera.org. That's also where you can make a contribution, or you can call us at 1-888-694-6931. That is 1-888-694-6931. Thanks.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.